has a book with two Tulane professors exploring long-term solutions for Louisiana's tax system. Jim Richardson came to Tigertown from Ann Arbor, another great football enclave, in 1970 when Charles Y. McClendon won his only SEC title for the Tigers. And 48 years later, he is the premier authority on the budget in Louisiana. And it is an honor to have you in our studio, Jim Richardson.
Thank you, Jim. Happy to be here.
Well, let's start with where we are and where we've been. And you've been around, as mentioned, since 87, and that was the year Buddy Romer was elected. And he was going to scrub the budget, and he had something called fiscal reform, which many people liked, but only 45% of the electorate liked, and it went down to defeat in April of 1989. And one of the architects was, ironically, John Neely Kennedy, who now would not embrace a plan that he liked in 1989. And if we had, let's start there. If we had, as a state, had accepted that, would we be in better shape now than we are?
Oh, I think definitely we would have been. And to a certain extent, we accepted it. We accepted it over time. And this is one of the things we said. We did a book in the 1980s on fiscal reform. And the one thing about a book on taxes needs to have a long shelf life. The ideas can't go away after a day or two. And indeed, a lot of the suggestions in that book were accepted, but not immediately. And part of that is just taxes affect individuals. They look at them very carefully. They make decisions as an electorate. And they look at it from their perspective as opposed to, say, just the state's perspective, which is natural and not unexpected at all.
Well, the book from Jim Richardson and the two Tulane professors, Stephen Sheffrin and James Alm, is exploring long-term solutions for Louisiana's tax system. And it goes into depth about the Stelly Plan, which a decade after Romer's plan fell through, was accepted by the electorate. And it appeared to be doing exactly what it was supposed to be doing, and then, boom, the legislature and Governor Jindal decided to do away with it. Was that a huge mistake?
Well, I think hindsight, it certainly was. I think what you have to appreciate is that under the Romer plan in 88-89 and under the Stelly plan, the purpose was to put a little bit more emphasis on the income tax as a revenue source as opposed to other sources. I mean, the bottom line was that in the 80s, we relied on the mineral revenues. That went away. If you wanted public services, you had to find some other tax source. The sales tax had been used by the state and by locals so much that it was getting overworked. So we said, if you really want to fund the services, you have to find a way to make use of the income tax. And we don't overuse that tax, but people have some concern about it. And that's what happened with Big Stelly in 2000. I guess first 2000, he tried one plan. It did not work, or people didn't accept it. In 2002, he went to a modification of that, but he did put more emphasis on the income tax in terms of funding public services. And actually, that went under two administrations. There were two parts of it. One, we did away with the excess itemized deductions as a deduction on state income taxes. That was repealed under Governor Blanco in 2007. And then the bracket changes were redone under Governor Jindal in 2008. So essentially, in 2007-2008, we repealed what the people had accepted by a narrow margin in 2002. And at that time, though, we had a huge surplus, and we felt we could do it.
And one of the lawmakers who voted for the repeal of Stelly was John Bel Edwards, our governor, who says it was a terrible vote.
Yeah. Well, at that time, you look back, we all made some decisions for which we had not made, I'm sure, but it was. But I think it was the element where we made – you made that change permanent in 2007 and 2008, and then suddenly the world turned around on you. There was that big financial collapse,
right,
nationally. The price of oil And I remember this very clearly. In May of 2008, the price of oil was $120 a barrel.
$120.
And it got up by July to over $140. Goldman Sachs indicated it could be $200 by the end of the year. We were debating if in the 80s, where should we put the price of oil? We didn't want to overdo it. Well, we did 84 and we overdid it because suddenly so the price of oil fell, the economy collapsed, and then we, on top of that, we decided to cut taxes. You put all those things together, and this is incredible. In 2008, we had general fund of about $12 billion. In 2 years, we had about $9 billion. That's a huge change, and we are still—
That's the state contribution.
Exactly. And that meant we had to suddenly adjust to that. And we also elected a governor general who made the statement very clearly he was not going to raise the tax. And he lived up to that until the last year,
and he really had no choice. But higher education, colleges and universities, the place where you have worked for almost a half century, they suffered the most.
Well, and again, from a practical perspective, that's the easiest place to cut from one way because they can raise their own money. They can impose a fee called tuition.
Right.
Or we now just call it a fee to avoid the TOPS program. We can employ fees. We can put tuition. Mm-hmm. So to a certain extent, we can pay our own way. But then that puts, again, it comes back to the people who are sending their kids to college. You have to pay our students have to take out loans or something like that. So, again, we're just moving around who's paying for higher education. And that's another debate in itself. Who should pay for higher education?
Well, you mentioned it's called a fee because if it's tuition, that means taxpayers ultimately will have to pay a lot more for TOPS.
Yes.
So we reword it as a fee, just like we don't call gambling gambling. We call it gaming because gambling is illegal in the state of Louisiana. Yeah. So tuition has helped fill the void, but it costs a lot more to go to college now than it used to.
Yes, it does. We're not alone across the country like that, but we've done a little bit worse in terms of raising tuition and fees in the last 10 years.
877-217-5757 is your number for Jim Richardson, the Revenue Estimating Conference private economist since 1987. And Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you are on the air with Jim Richardson, Phil.
Yeah, good morning. I'd just like to know when that tide turned. I mean, I kind of hate to betray how old I am, but when I went to college, there was tuition was affordable. There was a state contribution and a federal contribution, and it was something that could be done.
All right. When did the tide turn in which tuition became unaffordable to people without some sort of stipend like TOPS?
No, I think that it started that process just in about 2008. We'd always been increasing tuition a little bit. There was always a little bit along the way. But in terms of putting such more responsibility on the students and their parents mm-hmm. and less on the state, that is, I think, a decision made in 2008. And again, it was one of those decisions, okay, what do I do? We've already said we're not going to raise taxes. And then we said we want to cut something, but where do we want to cut? Well, you have to get a majority of the legislators say, I'm willing to cut there. Well, they look around. You have health care, another big – you have elementary and secondary education, but that's constitutionally protected to a certain extent. And then you say, where can I cut? Well, higher education becomes, for the boards, raise your tuition a little bit.
The book is Exploring Long-Term Solutions for Louisiana's Tax System from Jim Richardson. We're back after this time out with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing. Your number is 877-217-5757, or you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. For Jim Richardson, the celebrated economist from Louisiana State University, 48 years. He knows more about the budget than anybody, including any former governor, current governor. And if you would like to chime in our remaining time with him, his latest book is Exploring Long-Term Solutions for Louisiana's Tax System. Aaron writes that fiscal reform plan known as STELE was not created by a bunch of revolutionary liberals. The people involved were Jay Darden and Vic STELE. These are not wild-eyed free spenders, are they?
No, well, Vic was a Republican from Lake Charles, an extraordinarily nice gentleman, and we worked on that very carefully, and he worked on it very carefully. Because the one thing about, and this is where the income tax becomes very sensitive, because if we say we're going to change the income tax, you or myself or anybody else can go say, okay, what does that mean for me? And it's a natural thing to do. Even when the Trump administration were looking at tax changes in December of 2017, and they're talking about changing things, as much as we keep up with what was happening, we're asking, well, what does that mean for me now? And so when you do an income tax change, you have to really sell people it's a good thing to do. And it was interesting when Buddy Romer tried to change it in 1989, I guess it was, mm-hmm. We actually won in areas where they were going to pay more income taxes. Yeah. We lost in areas where they would have paid less.
That's quite often the case, yep. That people don't vote in their best interest, whatever those interests are. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Jim Richardson, who follows the state budget like nobody else. And it may not be the sexiest topic in the world, but it's one that affects us all. Crystal writes about the long quest that Foster Campbell has had with an oil processing fee. What would this do if it ever became a reality? Would this mm-hmm. be a panacea?
No, I always said that Foster's processing fee was kind of a short-term gain and long-term pain, because what Foster's wanted to do is to put a tax on oil coming through the state and being processed here, regardless of where it may be produced. Right now, we have a severance tax, but a severance tax is imposed only on the oil or gas that is obviously produced within our taxing jurisdiction, which is the state of Louisiana and then 3 miles off limit. Now, he is saying we need to tax this oil if it's piped in from any place in the world, Texas, offshore, or whatever. And there you can argue there's some to that. Now, the problem, I think, with that is that obviously, he was saying a company like Exxon or a company like Marathon or a company like Shell, they're not going to move their plants. And in the short run, they're not. In the long run, they can make changes in terms of not expanding here. So I think it imposes another tax. And the other part is we're going to impose that tax will be passed along. Well, we got to remember, we're not the only place in the world that refines oil. Mm-hmm. We are one of many places. So our people, the people who produce oil here or produce gasoline or products here, cannot just suddenly say, I'm going to pass this tax along. Somehow they have to eat it, pass it, lower wages to their workers, lower.
He says it would be a few cents at the pump.
Well, but a few cents, it makes a difference to people. And if indeed they can get.
But if we paid no income tax,
but cents now we're not talking about us. We're talking about.
The country.
We're talking about a much bigger marketplace where they don't care about what we pay in income taxes here. Okay?
Well, he says that basically if they don't like it, lump it, take it down the road and dump it, that they've been ripping up our coast, they've torn up the state, and we have not benefited from what we've done for the rest of the country.
Yeah. And that is element in terms of the coast. It's a different issue. That's nothing to the problem. It's a different issue entirely, which we need to discuss in a different framework.
Matt in Millerville. Matt, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Jim Richardson. Hi, Matt.
Hi. I have a question about property taxes and how they could be adjusted to fit in. Not how much we're taxed, but the values of the property. You know, I have family members that have 20, 30 acres and they pay absolutely no property taxes on the property.
All right. Good point.
Yeah, and I think it is a good point, because we always we typically say we want more local responsibility. Well, the one tax they have is a property tax, but yet the Constitution of the state limits a great deal of what that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part of it is, and indeed I believe what Matt's talking about, and I don't know where this property is exactly, but remember there's a difference between if you're in an urban area, you have it on your fair market value and then the assessment ratio. If your land is farmland or timberland, it's on use value. So I could own a lot of land very close to an urban area, which could have a very high market value if I wanted to develop a shopping center there or a commercial office space. But as long as I grow crops or have trees or lumber, it's taxed at a use value. So it could be a much lower property tax, much, much lower. And then you have the assessment issue, too, about how you assess property, but doesn't change hands very often. When do you grade it up and things like that? And that's a constant battle.
For years, we had a discussion about the homestead exemption. That's kind of gone away.
Well, that's gone away from – and I modestly, I want to claim a little bit of victory for that. In our book in the 1980s, we suggested we're going to reduce it from 75 to 25.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually from $7,500 to $2,500 because it's on assessed value.
Right.
Wanted to reduce it. Well, a number of political people told me I was nuts. It's never going to happen. And they're right in that sense. Not about my being nuts, but about it not happening, okay? And then I said, okay, we talked about how do we fight this then? Well, our argument was, like, what we need to do is we need to make sure we never raise it again. It was passed in 1982, it was $7,500. And we said if we can keep it at $7,500 for a long, long time, it will naturally go down in value because of inflation.
Right.
And what you've seen over the last 30 years or so, or 40 years, I guess it is now, you'll see that there are a lot more residential people paying property taxes. Perhaps not like they do in Texas for sure, but they are paying more property taxes to help out local governments.
Well, what should be done in the near term?
Well, in the last three sessions in 2018, they finally came to some type of agreement that's going to last through 2025. It's not ideal in many ways, but it is at least some stability, assuming the world doesn't fall apart or it's not a big recession or something. But or even now, oil prices are dropping below what we anticipated, perhaps. But I think at least we have some stability there. I think then we have to, as a community, we have to think about what do we want to do if we want to go to put a little bit more emphasis on the income tax, if we want to expand that sales tax base to include services. But I think as people, we really have few choices. If we want to fund the services we now have, there are only two major taxes out there that you have to deal with, and that's the income tax and the sales tax. And I think that's the overall stability. And then I think the other side of that coin that we have to worry about is if we want to have infrastructure projects, we have to decide how we want to raise the funds to support them. It's either gasoline taxes or some version of a gasoline tax.
A gasoline tax, and we're having a difficult time. What, 17 cents was the proposal from a Republican, Steve Carter,
yeah.
and he had supposedly 55 members of the House who were on board, but it takes 70.
That's right. Yeah, and I think that's – and again, that's an issue where you want to raise the gasoline tax across the state. And they're saying, okay, where are the projects going to be? Well, most of that money is going to be spent on big, big projects. So they tried to spread it out as much as they can. But that was happening in 1990 under Romer again when they last raised the gasoline tax.
Right. Well, we do have to take a break, but okay. We will return with more from Jim Richardson and also talk about the events on Saturday night after this timeout. This is Jim Engster. Pleased to be with you on Talk Louisiana. And hope you had a festive Thanksgiving. We'll talk about the events at College Station in a few moments. It wasn't a pleasant night for LSU or its fandom. But Jim Richardson, who started at LSU in the year of 1978, LSU lost its opener that year 20-18 to Texas A&M in Baton Rouge, Tiger Stadium. I was a kid, and I remember reading about Governor John McKithen. He knocked out a window in his limousine. He was so upset about it. He says, "There goes the national title," and he was right. 877-217-5757 for Jim Richardson, the foremost economist in Louisiana. His latest book is Exploring Long-Term Solutions for Louisiana's Tax System from LSU Press. Dan at LSU, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Oops, I think we just lost Dan. So, But Dan, I'm sure, like many others who have opined both by email and phone, wanted to know about our solutions. And you mentioned the two areas. Yeah. Sales taxes and income taxes, but nobody wants to go there.
Well, I know. That's the tough part about it. But yet at some point, that's where we have to focus our attention on how to make those taxes as fair and also as economic development-oriented as we can. And there are a number of other exemptions and credits that we can also look if we want to keep those as well. We've done a lot to reduce the tax base.
We have done a lot to reduce the tax base?
Yes, because every exemption that we put in there, it reduces the sales tax base or the income tax base. Every credit reduces the tax liability. So we have done that. It's not the best plan all the time. In fact, economists always say keep the base as broad as you can and the rates as low as you can. Unfortunately, that's not always the political will.
All right. I think we have Dan back. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. And Dr. Richardson might even remember me. I went to his office to talk about this issue a couple of years ago during the budget discussions. Nice talking with you, Dr.
All right. Well, what is your question, Dan?
The question, sir, is, we continue to ignore the oil industry as a potential source of revenue. And it comes to budget, we always talk about where do we cut. Well, how about asking where do we raise additional revenues?
All right. He's sounding a lot like Foster Campbell. Now, is it possible to split the baby here without having a full-fledged processing fee? Is there some way to extract a pound of flesh from the oil and gas industry without disrupting the world we know?
I think there's always ways of looking at we are now doing a study about how we tax oil and gas in the state. Because remember, the oil and gas tax system was established in the 1970s under a very different set of environmental rules, different set of federal controls on natural gas prices, federal controls on oil prices at the time, at least certain limits. So we're going back and saying, should we rethink our severance tax system in total? And how should we do it now? We're a little bit different from Texas in how we tax things. Not a lot, but a little bit different. Also, Texas allows taxes on oil reserves in the ground as a property tax. We don't do that at all. It's unconstitutional. So there are a lot of different ways of doing things. We can look ahead. But, no, I think if we want to say, can we always find somebody we can hit up for a little bit more money, we have to accept the responsibility. If we want public services, we have to pay for them. And I think we tried the gaming in the 90s, even though technically we don't want gambling, but we do gaming. We did a lottery. We have video poker. We have river boats. We have a land-based casino. We have track betting. So we have every type of betting. Now we're talking about sports betting. But that's never going to carry the day either. In the end, it comes back to us as people. What do we really want, and what are we willing to pay for?
Well, Jim Richardson, thanks for joining us. The book is Exploring Long-Term Solutions for Louisiana's Tax System.
Okay.
Good to see you.
Thank you.